You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode number 169 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
Nice. And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. It's been a long time since we've potted.
Wow. You think it's been that long?
I mean, it's been like 9 days.
We shouldn't have left you?
Without a dope pod to step to?
Kind of felt like we did. we left people with a pod, which you casually mentioned that you ate the chicken teriyaki sandwich. Sweet onion teriyaki, right? That's what it's called?
Yes.
At Subway, and somehow that led to a teriyaki conversation.
It led to us announcing a chicken teriyaki bracket in spring 2020.
Yeah, the internet is waiting to talk about teriyaki. Literally any mention of teriyaki, Seahawks Twitter is ready.
As you know, I mean, there's nothing more exciting to people than the next bracket we're doing.
Yes.
The current search, could take or leave. But the next one, it's very exciting.
After today, I'm pretty sick of eating sandwiches.
Oh boy. Well, maybe
I had a couple of very rich sandwiches.
Yeah, maybe
today.
You should try spacing them out instead of waiting until like a month after I've eaten them to have them.
I need some water. Anyway.
All right, let's get to, we've got a lot to get to this week. So let's start out with this week's beer, provided by our beer sponsor, Tavor. Tavor is an app that offers craft beers that aren't distributed nationwide for purchase. You order the ones you like, and they'll be shipped together on a regular basis for a flat shipping cost. Going forward, we'll be drinking beers sent to us by Tavor on the pod each week, and you can take advantage too. If you sign up for an account with Tavor and enter the code PeltonCast in the promos section, you'll get $10 credit after spending $25 with Tavor. So this week, we have a beer that should go well with your upset stomach.
I've been avoiding this one.
You're more scared of it than I am.
There are words that I don't think go together. Three of them in particular. And those words are lactose, double, and IPA.
You're good with all those words individually. You're even maybe good with two of the three.
I'm a lot less. You know how people have words that they're really bothered by? Moist and the like?
Yes.
Lactose is not a good word.
It's the Drecker Brewing Company Involuntary Narcissistic Rage, which, I mean, this is quite
just a all candy. Five of these words on the front of this, even Drecker.
There's just a lot going on here. Made with Vic's Secret, Belma, and Huel Melon hops.
Wow, Fargo, North Dakota.
I don't feel like I've ever heard of any of those hops before.
It's a Huel Melon hop is what you're trying to say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's gonna predict that Matt Flynn should be the starting quarterback.
Oh, Huel Melon. It sounds a lot like Huel Melon, doesn't it?
It does.
Is Huel Melon still on the airwaves in Seattle?
I would assume so, yes.
All right.
All right, let's crack this open because we also have a toast to get to.
Oh, really?
We've got some more sponsorship news. Let the listener note that Tristan had to open the can using his teeth.
We're this close to you stopping the recording and yelling at me.
No, I just want to film that. That should be on the PeltonCast Instagram.
Me opening up the beer with my teeth?
Yes.
You know who can open up a beer with their teeth?
Probably a lot of people.
That's QB1, Baker Mayfield.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that? I've never seen anything like that before. He opened up the beer to shotgun it just with his teeth. Bam, shotgun it. It was impressive stuff. Do you see this at the Indians game?
Of course I saw it.
All right, that was incredible.
Did I see the...
I'm actually now a fan of the other C-Town.
Yeah, I mean, we are all...
I've converted. Bone Thugs and Harmony is the new Macklemore.
So did you see... I assume this offer is not still going, but Aaron Johannes of Seahawks.com tweeted about he would buy a beer for anyone who retweeted that. Am I remembering his name right?
Did he put an end date? He didn't want to actually get held accountable for it, like Evan having to do the tattoo across his chest.
He appears to have bought some people's jerseys.
Jerseys or beers?
Did I say beers?
You said jerseys?
Yes, jerseys.
He's buying jerseys?
Baker Mayfield jerseys.
Wow.
I don't know that he can possibly do this for all these people. Yes.
Why?
I mean, I think he just thought it was cool. It's at 66,000 retweets.
Wow, that is...
I mean, it's just not realistic to possibly do that.
What does the tweet exactly?
I will buy every single person that retweets this a Baker Mayfield jersey, and I'm not kidding.
You know,
so there have been tweets, I think, about people who have gotten jerseys from him already, I think. He followed up. This was, so that tweet originally was on when this happened on August 3rd. And then on August 5th, he tweeted, folks, if you received your Baker Mayfield jersey, please tweet them to me. I'm trying to show people I'm 100% serious about this and not playing at all whatsoever.
Yeah, but I don't think he's buying 66,000 of them.
It seems unlikely. Oh, people are just joking about...
He hasn't actually.
Oh, getting them. Okay, that makes more sense. All right.
Still, it was impressive stuff.
It was.
I opened up this beer with my teeth, but it was a lot less impressive, is what I'm trying to say.
You're not shotgun in this lactose double IPA. Oh, my God. I
would keel over and die. This would be the last ever Pelton cast. You're welcome, the listener.
Well, we'd go out on top now.
The best and last ever Pelton cast would have lasted 5 minutes.
We would go out on top.
All right, so we have some toasts to get to here.
We actually really only have one. Oh, I guess two toasts. But we
our toast section is getting bloated. Only two toasts.
Well, there's the one like standard toast. That's okay. Always it for the next month here. But we're welcoming another sponsor to the pod this week.
Wow!
And this is one that is near and dear to our hearts, is Seattleites. Pagliacci Pizza.
Really?
Yeah, you're just now learning of this?
I couldn't even really get the really out.
So you got your Baker Mayfield jersey? I mean...
Pagliacci Pizza. I mean, when we think of the companies that we were interested in partnering with, they were, the list included, Taco Time, Lil Woody's, Pagliacci Pizza, Tavor, of course.
As soon as we learned of their existence.
Yes. But... legendary Seattle businesses. We mentioned on the phone when talking with Pagliacci, like as children watching Almost Live, you think of the classic Seattle entities, the Space Needle, the Sonics, Almost Live, things that still exist. The Pelton cast, right? Yeah. It's just like we are perfectly in line with this lineage. And after every single episode, I wish we need to find the exact verbiage, right? But it's like something consideration provided by provided by Pagliacci Pizza. And I was just like, what is this magical place? Right? Because we're kids. We're not going to Pagliacci Pizza. I bet the first time I went there, I was probably 15.
That sounds about right. I mean, we would maybe see it along 99.
Or I'd see it and I'd be like, that's the thing on Almost Live, yeah. Right? And then you have their pizza, and the pizza is excellent. We've discussed it at length on this podcast and the preferences of Storm employees when eating it.
That is true.
Dance Trooper otherwise. And it's a probably...
The first link that comes up when I search for Pagliacci Almost Live is Seattle Classic Almost Live was almost funny. From the slog.
Wow.
And the slog has made an enemy today.
Yeah.
Actually,
first of all, how dare you? I didn't say classic Seattle institutions. I said Pelton cast, and I did not say the slog.
Actually, they tweeted this almost precisely 1 year ago today, August 6, 2018. They posted that. So that's when they made an enemy out of me. I just didn't know it until now.
Not okay. Especially with the Pagliacci ad. This is on the Pagliacci blog.
No, this is the website. That was not the thing.
Okay.
Their sponsorship began in 1989 and went until the final episode aired in 1999.
Wow.
That's one of the 40 facts about Pagliacci Pizza, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year.
Just like the Pelton cast.
And you know what else we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of
what
this
is that?
Year? The Sonics Championship in 1979. Oh, so that's why Pagliacci, the pizza boxes, and then also the t-shirts, including the one I'm currently wearing, that Pagliacci sent me, feature Squatch and the championship trophy, as well as the 40th anniversary. It is the ultimate
Okay.
Yeah, we're,
I guess you need 100,000 Twitter followers to get sent a t-shirt by Pagliacci.
We're going to get you one.
My 402 followers are going to hear about this.
I mean, hopefully they do when you retweet the Pelton cast posting about this.
They're going to hear about this positively. But it just felt like such a natural partnership for us.
Yes.
Pagliacci Pizza as one of the great institutions in Seattle food and sort of existing in that range where we live in Seattle, fastish food.
Yeah. And so specifically, one of the things that we talked about Pagliacci coming on board for. We don't talk about it every week, but when we talk about the NBA returning to Seattle because of Pagliacci's desire to have the Sonics come back, that now is going to be specifically sponsored by Pagliacci.
There we go.
And we've got some news on that front this week. We're not going to get to it right now, but we'll get there.
Well, Pagliacci Pizza wants the Sonics to come back, and so do we. Thank you so much for working with us. We're excited about eating a lot of more pizza. We're excited about Pagliacci.
And we're excited about the listener maybe eating some Pagliacci.
Oh, really? When would that happen?
That might happen at the third annual Peltoncast live show coming up Friday, September 6th at Belltown Yacht Club. Doors at 7 p.m. Tickets are available for $10 with 50% of proceeds going to the Family First Center in Renton, spearheaded by former Seahawks wide receiver Doug Baldwin. Special guest, third Pelton brother, Ben Baldwin, will be there in attendance of the Athletic Seattle. And you can get those tickets on our Twitter account or on the Peltoncast website.
And things you can expect. Come hungry.
We got to that one, this one.
Hijinks.
Oh.
Bingo. Special guests. Surprises. Famous cousin Katie.
Should we get on planning some of these things?
No, let Katie do it. Okay. She hasn't even committed to going yet, I don't think.
Is she
going to
play in the chairs? Should people count on those?
If anybody out there has a hookup on like 60 folding chairs, let us know.
Yeah, definitely let us know on that one.
But it's going to be a fun time. I mean, you can just close your eyes and try to guess what kind of food might be there.
Yeah, just take a wild guess out of all the possible food in the world. All right, one other announcement this week. We mentioned this at the very tail end of last week's podcast.
There were a few people who made it there.
Yeah, if you got all the way through the Seafair preview.
Have you drank any of this lactose beer yet?
And let me tell you, no, not yet.
We've already done like two to three toasts.
Yeah. That's good. It doesn't taste very lactosey.
All right, I was pretty apprehensive. It's not bad.
We announced this.
I thought it would taste kind of frothy.
So we'll have a full Seafair recap, of course. Analysis of most definitely. The Home Street Cup coming up at the end of this podcast. But if you made it all the way through the Seafair preview last weekend, you heard us mention that the Peltoncast Fantasy Football League, or leagues in this case, are coming back for 2019. So please email us at peltoncast@gmail.com if you wish to be a part of it. Even if you were a part of it last year, we'll probably send out reminders to everyone through the league setup. But
when you re-upped the league for this season, I got a notification about it. I'm assuming others did.
Yeah, but they haven't specifically responded to that to let us know.
Most have responded that they were not interested. No.
I mean, we had pretty high turnover from year one to year two for whatever reason. So we'll see this year whether people. And then come back, and then how many newcomers we have to the league, and you know how many teams we end up having. And
am I finally going to be in the same league as you this year?
Technically, if we go by the relegation and promotion we were supposed to do, then yes. Although I kind of like the idea of having at least one Pelton brother in each league.
So you're scared?
I'm not scared. Some of us made the finals made the semifinals of our league last year.
Some of us beat you in the other league. Just be cool here.
Yeah, that's the other league, though. That's not the Peltoncast League.
You're still in it.
You haven't even made the playoffs in the Peltoncast League in 2 years, have you?
God. Yeah, I'm aware.
Who's the real fantasy genius around here?
Watch yourself. I have to win the league this year. There's just...
Yeah.
In fact, I'll say it right now. I'm giving up the fantasy genius title if I don't win the league this year.
Oh, wow. Wow, a declaration.
I mean, you gave me the title, so you're the one who has to take it away from me, but I'm willing to give up the fantasy genius title.
All right. Well, I guess maybe if you win our friends and family.
I was thinking maybe we shouldn't do that anymore.
Wait, what?
You're devastated by this. All of the people who care about that league can play in this other league.
But we're not necessarily all in the same league. We're not necessarily all playing against each other.
Because you're scared.
No, because there's two leagues and people have to be divided among them. I mean, the listener wants a chance to beat a Pelton brother. So if you're in the league without a Pelton brother, I mean, maybe you could have the famous cousin Katie, and that would be pretty exciting in its own right.
I love to beat the famous cousin Katie at fantasy.
And it happens frequently.
All right, fine. We'll keep the league going. I mean, if you like losing, we'll keep the league going. Wow. I still have the Fantasy Genius title there. However, so what was that email again?
Peltoncast@gmail.com.
If you're interested in playing fantasy football, some basic rules. Typically, we've done, I think one league was 10, one was 12. Last year, we've done PPR. Typically, I've done a snake draft. Those are just some basic details. I've had to adjust to PPR personally. And I think I think it's affected me. I think that's why I'm worse in this league. I've also had to adjust to stiffer competition. Typically, I've been playing against pretty questionable competition.
Again, made it to the semifinals last year. Have performed better than you both years of the Peltoncast.
Here's fantasy. How many titles you have.
Look, I'm like the Buffalo.
You have as many titles as Oregon has national championships.
Well. That's maybe a fair comparison because I really can't win the big one, as it turns out. But some solid regular seasons nonetheless. Should we talk about sandwiches? Oh, man. So our search for Seattle's best sandwich has taken a couple weeks off here because some of us have had a difficult time getting two sandwiches. But thankfully, you did pull through and do two of them today, two that, again, I went to in mid-July.
Okay.
Those locations being Meat and Bread in South Lake Union and Sunset Fried Chicken inside Queer Bar in Capitol Hill. So let's start with Meat and Bread, which you'll recall came up on this podcast a few weeks ago when Bill Barnwell made a guest appearance. He was talking about it as his favorite Northwest sandwich chain, having had it in Vancouver. So Meat and Bread debuted in Vancouver in 2010. There's three locations in the Vancouver Metro, two elsewhere in Canada.
Probably in Banff.
It's not, sadly, in Banff. Calgary and Abbotsford, where I once attended an air show as a child.
You went to Abbotsford?
Yeah.
For the what do they call the fighter jets?
The Canadians, the Snowbirds.
Oh yeah, yeah. Big time Snowbird show.
Canadian demonstration.
Anyway, so two and
I don't know if you were there at that air show or not. You were probably very young. So they opened in Seattle in 2015, first in Capitol Hill.
One in Regina.
No, sadly. Which closed the following year, and then one in South Lake Union opened later in 2015, and that one remains open. So I had gone to Meat and Bread in Vancouver when I was up there in 2016.
Wow, Mr. International.
Yes, and have fond memories of it, but had never been to the Seattle location in the 4+ years that are the 4 years that it had been open before our search for Seattle's best sandwich.
So I've been in the Capitol Hill location.
Yeah, when we first talked about it, you were like, are you going to the Capitol Hill location? I was like, that's not a thing.
Just keeping up with the times over here. They've been closed since 2015.
No, they 2016. Opened in
2016. Okay. So they've only been for a year in Capitol Hill.
Yeah,
it was a very odd location, I will say.
I mean, there's also stiff sandwich competition in Capitol Hill.
It's very competitive. They were in the sandwich district. In Capitol Hill.
I mean, there's just a lot of great food in Capitol Hill.
It's in the south of the Mose building, though, where it's just like, for some reason, that's a dividing line for successful businesses.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to the Chuck Klosterman, David Shields book tour tomorrow.
Where is that at?
Elliott Bay.
Oh, at the Elliott Bay right there.
Yeah, so I'm like, it's a difficult decision what I'm going to eat when I go down there. I still haven't decided yet. Maybe some ramen. I haven't had ramen in entirely too long.
God, I could really go for some ramen.
Couldn't we? There's apparently a new hot new ramen place.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. We're going to have to do a whole new search.
A new bracket. New bracket. Dude, scratch the teriyaki. We're doing ramen.
If I have one meal in LA this weekend and I could go anywhere in LA, but don't want to spend too much money, where should I go?
I mean, I don't know. I'm the right person to ask this question, but
because you spend too much money on every meal.
No,
you're like, I mean, if there's not at least a couple of Michelin stars.
I mean, look, I've been to LA overnight twice now in the last
what
month
is that
here.
Tacos 1975?
Tacos 1986.
Oh, okay.
So at some point, after I go back down there in September, and after you've gone down, I think you're just going down overnight as well. I want to unveil an LA Taco Power Rankings.
Wow.
I'm inspired by that. But
I don't think I've had enough LA tacos to really participate in LA Taco Power Rankings.
I would say,
where should I go?
The ones I have gone to lately, and the ones that are located in downtown LA at the very least, Sonora Town is my favorite.
Sonora Town.
Which is I don't know if it's the only LA place. It's the only one I've gotten to so far that's featured in the Netflix series Las Crónicas del Taco. which is primarily set in Mexico's in Mexico, all over the country. But then they also go to LA and talk about Sonora Town.
Okay, that's. I'm wondering if I've been there. Okay.
So that's my recommendation.
That's good to intel.
Yeah. And that was like basically the only meal I ate in LA that time, because it was last week, because I was there so short, so briefly. Okay, so meat and bread.
Okay, yes, meat and bread.
You went there. What did you get?
I got the porchetta sandwich.
Yeah, that's their specialty.
I said, the person who was making it in front of me, because they make it basically on demand, right? A person goes up to a counter and then they make it right in front of you. I mean, I guess.
They slice up some porchetta. Chop it up.
And as like, I'll have the porchetta sandwich. I was like, was that what you were just making? And he was like, yeah, it's the best sandwich. I mean, okay. Sign me up.
I'm intrigued by their meatball. So I actually had two sandwiches when I went to meet Brett. Because I was like, these aren't that big.
Wow.
So I had the porchetta.
They might not be that big, but they're hearty.
And then I have a friend who works at Amazon who is signed up for like one of the meal things where you get a, you can do a different meal every day. And they had a different sandwich. The Cajun chicken was okay. The one that was on the menu. That was like the special of the day.
What is this thing where you can do a meal every day?
I don't know. It's some sort of app. I don't know what app it is. They're also not sponsoring us. So
not, this is not like an Amazon thing, though. It's not like Amazon pays at some location to give you a meal every day.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think you're required to be an Amazon employee to do it.
So the location is, the previous one at Meat and Bread, I said, was kind of like an awkward place, like a block away from where you want to be, right?
Right.
Sort of like around the backside. It was a little bit difficult to find, even, despite being, it's like Capitol Hill is very populated, and then there's nobody. All of a sudden, there's a block of like three blocks between the Newmo's building and the university. And there's like somehow nobody there.
Yes.
Except for a Denny's. Or an IHOP. Is that an IHOP?
It's an IHOP.
Okay.
Yeah, get it straight.
Except for an IHOP. I haven't eaten there in probably 15 years.
I've never eaten that IHOP. Or in any IHOP or that particular IHOP?
Both.
Okay.
This location is in South Lake Union, where they have those like long buildings that house like four or five sort of like, I want to say like nouveau bouge restaurants, right? Like it's not fancy food, right? It's also not fast food. I mean, Lil Woody's sort of fits in there. I think Lil Woody's is maybe even a little bit too lowbrow for what they're doing. And they're weird buildings, right? They have like a lot of long ramps, sort of like weird gates to get into them, giant doors, a lot of glass going on. They're very much specific. They're designed by Amazon for Amazon.
I don't know if they're designed by Amazon.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think that building is.
The neighborhood feels very...
I mean, for Amazon, I would agree with, but by Amazon, I dispute.
Okay, they were designed with the intent of putting in restaurants for Amazon employees to eat at.
Yes, absolutely.
And they all feel kind of weird. Yeah. I'm going to say, I don't think I've ever had like a great meal in the area.
What was particularly galling to me here is I had to go to the bathroom because I wanted to wash my hands before I ate the sandwich. Uh-huh. And like I had to like go to the security desk and get a code from the security guard who wasn't at the security desk.
It's just
it was
so
like
that
a 10-minute ordeal.
If an Amazon employee saw a homeless person, you don't even want to know what would happen. They go long lengths, great lengths to make sure that they don't see one. Go see a fucking security desk to go to the bathroom. Okay. But anyway, it's kind of disorienting.
I'm not holding that against meat and bread.
You can just edit that out. It's a little bit disorienting going there, I guess is what I'm saying, right?
I suppose so. I liked its once I actually realized where it was, I liked its location because it was shockingly easy to park for South Lake Union near the building.
It was, I guess, slightly easier to park. It's probably not a location I would go to unless I was going to one of these restaurants for a search for Seattle's best or to eat the Pelton Cast burger at Lil Woody's.
I mean, I sometimes go to other areas in South Lake Union to like meet friends who work at Amazon.
Okay.
But yeah, not that particular side. I had never been to that side of the street, basically.
Okay, the porchetta sandwich.
So I would say that to me, the porchetta was not, it was definitely good, but it was not quite as good as the porchetta I had had.
Let me just describe it top to bottom here, right? Yeah. You've got like a nice French bread.
Yeah.
Sliced in half. a healthy pile of porchetta, freshly sliced off.
Yes.
And then salsa verde, a rich amount of salsa verde, right? This is not, they're not skimping on the salsa verde. And then something called pork cracklings, right?
Okay.
Which, did you not have this on your sandwich?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely listed.
The crunchy, chewy part of pork, right?
Yeah, I don't think I like that part.
It's terrible. Like, I like the idea of giving it a crunch or whatever. It's like a potato chip on your sandwich.
I'm not a big fan of crunch in my sandwich. I have never gotten the whole put a potato chip in my sandwich thing.
But a potato chip you eat, it doesn't stick in your teeth and it goes away. It's not, it shouldn't be providing that much flavor. It's like basically like a piece of lettuce. It should provide a crunch that you bite into so that everything isn't too soft, but then it should go away. The pork cracklings, they stick with you. Like, I'm like prying pork crackling out of my teeth after, right? They're like so chewy. The flavor is so rich. I would like a technical definition of what a pork crackling is.
Okay.
You're going to find one.
I don't know if I'm going to look that up right now.
But it's extremely rich and it sticks in your teeth and it's just like, it almost overpowers the rest of the sandwich. The salt, every single piece of it, the porchetta is like extremely rich. The salsa verde is extremely rich.
Yeah, I mean, but that's sort of how a porchetta sandwich is supposed to be. So my point of comparison for this sandwich was the porchetta that I had in Las Vegas from the why am I blanking? Lardo.
Okay.
Which I don't know if they even have porchetta in Portland. I've certainly never had it, but that's what I went with at the Vegas location in the Cosmopolitan Block 16. And it was so rich that it was difficult for me to eat dinner like 9 hours later, but it was amazing.
Was it? Yeah. What else is on that porchetta sandwich?
It was pretty much the same ingredients. I mean, really? I think the porchetta is fairly standard. It was just, the meat was more flavorful to me and they didn't have the pork cracklings. So that,
get those pork cracklings out. At first, so I think it was like, pork cracklings.
I think it was a thicker amount of pork was in the porchetta at Lardo.
I mean, I had a lot of pork and it looked very good. What I would have liked is I would have liked sort of like a red salsa, not a sweet salsa, not like a rich salsa. I would have liked spicy.
Just something to cut the
Yeah, just a different richness, flavor. A like it, you can't do rich on top of rich on top of richer.
That's fair.
It's just too much. Flavor-wise, I couldn't finish the whole thing.
Okay, so so after I finished the porchetta, I went to sandwich number two.
Oh my God.
Well, I also wasn't planning to have a sandwich for dinner later that evening. The Cajun, they call it the Cajun. It is chicken. Chicken, pickled sweet peppers, lemon garlic aioli, and shredded cabbage. And I gotta say, it was kind of actively bad.
Wow.
There was actively way bad. Too much lemon garlic aioli. And it just seemed very mayonnaise-y. And I like mayonnaise. Like, I'm not anti-mayonnaise.
Yeah, but white.
You don't, exactly. But you don't want too much of it. And at the end, it was like way too much. I was like having to scrape it off the sandwich. The chicken was not very flavorful. The Cajun spice was not noticeable. If you want to eat something Cajun, go get a freaking Raging Cajun.
Wow. All right.
That's my takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, my feeling about it was the porchetta, it was a fine sandwich, but if you're telling me this is the best sandwich, I'm telling you, I'm good.
I'm pretty sure. So my memories are only vague. It was 3 years ago. I went, I think it was better in Vancouver. I think this is maybe a dislocation issue, not a meat and bread issue.
Okay, I'll tell you, I went to the Capitol Hill location one time.
Well, did I return? It could be a Seattle thing, I'm saying. Like, it may just not travel as well south of the border.
I mean, the difficult thing about going to the Capitol location was that I had to walk by both Honey Hole and the other exactly. coast to get there. And it's just like, why would I not stop That's at why one of these locations?
You have to be really good to survive in Capitol Hill. So I still scored it an 87.
No, not even I think it's a 78.
Okay.
It just like, it started out and I was like, oh, this is good. I was watching him eat it, or I was watching him make it. And I was like, this is looking good. I'm excited about eating the sandwich.
It's presented well on a nice little piece of wood if you eat it there.
Oh, yeah. You know I love that, yeah. Right?
Photographs well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I want all my food to be served on wood planks. Like, I've got a little bit of Amazon in me. but then I was eating it, and like the first bite, I'm like, this is good. The second bite, I'm like, oh, I don't know. The third bite, I'm like, this is kind of work. And then by the time I got to like three quarters done with it, I was just like, there's pork cacklings deep in my mouth. It's the richest thing that I've ever had. I had to stop into a gas station, I swear to God, and buy a Diet Coke. Because I was like, I need a flavor. I need something that's not rich to get this flavor out of my mouth.
Wow.
Diet Coke scores a perfect 100.
Always does. All right, let's talk about Sunset Fried Chicken, part of the Monica Demas Capitol Hill Empire. It's the second Monica Demas sandwich we've reviewed as part of our search for Seattle.
What was the first one?
Well, Neon Tacos.
Ah.
The torta there. Opened in 2016 in Rachel's Ginger Beer in Capitol Hill, and then moved last fall to Queer Bar when Maona went into RGB in Capitol Hill, having previously been in the U Village RGB location. They kind of consolidated the two of those. Also, in addition to that, Sunset Fried Chicken is headed to SeaTac Airport at some point as part of their makeover of their food.
They'll probably
offerings.
Never make it, and it'll end up being a Subway.
There's only so many Subways they could have. The menu.
You got to have an A, B, C, D, N gate Subway.
The menu also includes a burger, a fried green tomato sandwich, wings, popcorn, chicken, and some sides. But make no mistake, the focus is on the chicken sandwiches.
And it also includes Top Gun on the TV.
that's part of the ambiance.
The volleyball scene of Top Gun on the TV all the time.
Look, I mean, it was the day after the Top Gun Maverick promo came out. I was
no, they were actually showing like not the Matrix 1. They're showing like a later The Matrix.
I've never seen any non-1 Matrix.
Wow,
and
really?
Have no plans to.
Yeah, I can tell you. I don't want to spoil it for you. Not great.
Yeah, I've heard. That's why I don't plan to. So the chicken sandwich choices, you have the OG, just kind of a standard chicken sandwich. The picante with spicy chicken and jalapenos. Is that what you went with?
I did, yes.
That's what I figured. That's part of why you need Pepto-Bismol now.
No, it's not.
And then the GT, or General Zhou's, I completely forgot how to pronounce that, with sweet and spicy
sauce. I always pronounce it Cho's.
I think how it looks like it looks like in English and how it's actually pronounced are very different. But that's not really the important thing.
This is now a pronunciation podcast.
It really is. Oh, no. And but we're still looking for a definition of pork cracklings.
God, if I have to eat another, I'm going to jump off a bridge if I have to eat another pork crackling.
All right. Well, while you're looking for that. So Sunset, before Maono appeared on the scene, it was like our go-to chicken sandwich. I've mentioned in the past, I have a friend, one of those former Storm employees who refused to eat anything but pepperoni pizza from Pagliacci.
they basically just say, so.
Okay. General So is chicken. He and I often go to lunch get chicken sandwiches.
General,
sir. Okay, there we go. So we previously frequently went to that RGB and got the Rachel's.
The Sunset Fried Chicken.
The Sunset Fried Chicken. Yes. And then as soon as we discovered the Maono at the other RGB, we immediately shifted to that one and started doing the Maono Fried Chicken instead. So, I mean, it's a tough comparison for Sunset because of the fact that they're like so clearly linked with the Maono Fried Chicken sandwich.
Yep.
All right. So had you had Sunset before? You had, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. At the Rachel's on 15th.
What did you think? I will say, I feel like it's slightly different now.
And worse. In my opinion, it was a worse experience.
Interesting. I didn't think it was a worse experience.
It could be. So the previous time I went there was during, I think, the second presidential debates in 2016.
Unless you're saying that's such a good memory that was tough to live up to.
Not a puppet. It was during that debate. Maybe that was the third debate. It was definitely that happened at those debates. It was right before we saw Kanye, actually. I think I was just so fired up about the whole experience. Well, you could have put anything in my mouth and I would have been so excited.
Boy, that night didn't age well, did it? The third presidential debate before seeing Kanye.
Oh, the Kanye show aged well. It was maybe the best Kanye show I've ever seen. Let's just watch yourself.
I had tickets for that show, but I missed it because I was back in Bristol for NBA meetings.
You should have quit.
I watched it at the Doubletree in Bristol with a bunch of our other NBA writers. I mean, I would say in terms of differences, it felt like the bun was more buttered. I don't know if you noticed that.
I don't know if I remember. And there's a lot that I don't remember of the Donald Trump presidency.
Okay.
Since then, I would say that the amount that the bun was buttered in 2016, I don't have any specific recollection of that.
The chicken was maybe a bit like greasier, I guess I would say.
Okay.
And then the so it comes with fries.
It comes with a shit ton of fries.
So many fries.
It was honestly, I was just like, I looked at it and I was like, I'm going to throw away like 300 fries.
It's right very now. Rare that I don't finish my fries. That was one of the few times. I went before the Capitol Hill block party and I was like, I just can't be walking around the rest of the night having eaten all of these fries. But overall, I would say it's a strong sandwich. So one of the things that separates this from the Mo'ono chicken sandwich is whereas Mo'ono goes with giant breasts of chicken, they use the chicken thigh.
Is that why it's bad? So I'm sorry.
First off, team thigh. Despite my love for the Mo'ono fried chicken sandwich, in general, given the choice, I'm going thigh.
I think we've had this conversation before. I'm learning a lot about the parts of a chicken from the from the search. When you bite into a chicken, right, into a piece of chicken, there are two ways that it can look. There's one, it's hard to describe, where it's like almost like sheets that you bite into it. It breaks off like pieces at a time.
Sure.
Which is the one that I had today at Sunset Fried Chicken.
Yes, thighs tend to do that more.
And it's gross.
Oh, this is a bad take.
When you bite into a piece of chicken, it should look juicy with sort of like the little bits along it after biting into it. And that would be the breast.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what the little bits along it exactly means, but
there's just when you look at it, it's
hard a hole as opposed to the thigh tends to cleave into like layers.
It's a very difficult, and this is the same thing that they did at what's it called?
Baka Baka also does thighs. Yes,
I just don't like chicken thighs.
Wow, I had chicken thighs earlier this evening.
I think it is a lower quality of chicken.
I mean, so chicken breast can frequently dry out. Mo'ono, but, that's not okay. not a risk. So maybe the chicken breast has a higher... Yeah, you can't say anything here?
I'm just so frustrated. It's like, I don't care if bad chicken breast can dry out. If you make it good, it doesn't. What matters to me is the thing that I'm eating, not if Jan is making chicken breast and it'll dry out. Everything will dry out when Jan's making it.
I mean, that's all true, but...
And it's not going to be seasoned either.
I like chicken thighs.
I personally am team anti-chicken thigh.
So you're against dark meat chicken?
It's weird because I really like dark meat turkey. That's what my preference would be in turkey. I think I'm against dark meat chicken.
So, I mean, look, clearly, as much as I like this sandwich, it's not as good as the Mo'ono fried chicken. It's not Seattle's best sandwich, but I think it's a really solid chicken sandwich. You don't agree? I scored this a 91.
A 91?
Yeah, I put it ahead of Baka Baka. Below Sisters and Brothers.
Wow, I definitely
in my fried chicken Baka rankings.
Baka Baka is just offering a more interesting package to me. Especially with the knowledge that you can get the biscuit and put it on the biscuit.
As I said, that didn't work well.
It's like, it's basically like, I'm eating this like you did with Mo'ono. And I'm like, why am I eating this thing when Mo'ono is so clearly better and is three blocks away?
It's a tough... It's, again, the same Capitol Hill problem we talked about. Like, the bar is set really high for food in Capitol Hill. You may have just talked me into going to Mo'ono before the show.
But the other thing is that when we met with Mo'ono head chef...
Cam Hanen
to talk Taco Time.
Former, by the way. He's left that position.
Really?
Yeah.
What's he doing now?
He's doing pop-up pizza.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for him. Pop-up pizza sounds great. We should go to a pizza pop-up. I'd eat that. I love pizza. Poliachi pizza in particular. Especially if he does a pop-up Poliachi pizza. He was describing to us basically why Mo'ono was in the Rachel's and not the Sunset. And he was basically just like, Rachel's preferred the way that we did things, right? You know, they thought it was a better process. And it kind of soured me a little bit on Sunset when I heard that. I was like, I know that the quality at Maono is excellent. I'm hearing that working with them is excellent, that the process is excellent. And I'm like, this...
That may have been a cover story for just the chicken being better.
Or that too. That's the thing. I don't care what the reason was.
Maono's just better than Sunset.
Rachel kicked Sunset out and brought Maono in. And I stand with Rachel.
Okay. I like that you're on a first name basis with her.
Not a last name basis. I don't know what that is.
Well, what's your rating?
83. I probably will not have this chicken ever again.
That's understandable. All right, two other sandwich topics we have to get to. First, we were tagged at one point in this. Did you see last week the people ranking sandwich types?
Oh, yeah, I did see this.
Yeah.
It felt clickbaity to me. Like, I mean, you can't get a definitive ranking of sandwiches because everybody has their preferences. But also, I'm like, this is a clown show over here. Some of the sandwiches they had at the bottom, no person in good faith could have those sandwiches. We're talking about a Reuben is like the last sandwich.
Second to last.
French dip and a Reuben and meatball. But also, like, if we're breaking it down, I kind of like all the sandwiches.
I do not like tuna or egg salad. I generally do not like salads that are not salads.
So wait, is grilled cheese the number one? Or is there something beyond this that we're not seeing?
I think that's the number one.
Okay. But how can roast beef be a very highly rated sandwich, but the Reuben is not?
How can roast beef be a highly rated sandwich and the French dip is not?
Well, okay, yeah.
That seems like an even stronger comparison. I mean, look, you know, it's ridiculous. But here's my thing, is that it's not just that these rankings are ridiculous. It's that ranking types of sandwich is itself ridiculous because the execution is so much more important than the type of sandwich. Like, what sandwich I get depends on which place I'm going to and what their specialty is.
We've talked about this before. There are certain items that matter. The genre of food matters more than the execution in some ways. Like teriyaki is one where it's like, if I'm driving along and I see a teriyaki place, I know that it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? Same with pizza. Like
high level of replacement in both of those.
The worst pizza is still not bad. The best pizza, of course, is Pagliacci pizza. but you understand what I'm saying? Like if you give me a terrible, like a Totino's pizza, I'm like, I will eat the crap out of that. Right? But the worst sandwich can be pretty brutal to eat.
I suppose that's probably true.
And like, especially the worst egg salad sandwich can be pretty brutal.
Or tuna.
I like tuna. You don't like tuna.
I like tuna as a fish. I don't like tuna fish when it's mixed with mayo and put in a can.
Maybe it's because of the sandwiches we've been eating lately, but I'm really pining for just like those sandwiches on that, like on that picture where it's just like a sandwich on bread and it's cold and it's delicious. Right?
You know,
it's like a freaking tuna sandwich right now.
You know a sandwich I had that kind of fit that criteria?
What was that?
So we heard last week, we discussed last week on this podcast that our mom, Jan, felt that Seattle's best sandwich was at the Emerald Queen Casino in Fife, where you can get either a turkey or a pastrami.
You have to specifically mention the Fife part.
Yeah, yeah. It's not even the one in Tacoma, it's the one in Fife. I mean, maybe they have the same sandwich as the one in Tacoma. She just doesn't make it there because it's too far south. So she brought one. Well, she and I were babysitting your 10 to 15 children last week while you were in Hawaii.
You're saying that she went to the casino while you were babysitting my children.
She did. Got that is accurate. I was here alone taking care of all 10 to 15 of them.
Wow.
And she brought one back. And I have to say that my distinctive takeaway from eating it was very Subway-ish.
Okay.
And I kind of say that it's not an insult. I like Subway, as we went over last week. I went to Subway after we recorded that podcast after. I'm pretty sure I did. Got a chicken teriyaki. It was great.
Sweet onion chicken teriyaki.
Yeah. But, you know, the pastrami was fine. The bread was very similar to the 9-grain honey oat that they used to have at Subway. I don't think they technically
they
have the 9-grain
honey oat.
I think
anymore.
They've gone to something slightly different. And, you know, the lettuce was in that shredded lettuce variety. So I mean, it was all completely fine, but it was definitely not Seattle's best sandwich.
Jan doesn't know. Look, we're not consulting. Jan is not going to be deciding at the live show on September 6th at Belltown Yacht Club. Get your tickets now. Jan is not going to be deciding that.
She's not.
We should also mention, now that we're 45 minutes into the podcast, August 16th at Fuel in Pioneer Square, Beast Pod Live, featuring the fabulous Pelton Brothers, plus the fine folks from Dome and Bedlam. Others.
Alex Coffey, Stacey Rost.
Alex Coffey, Stacey Rost of Tai High School.
Yes. There's going to be multiple Tai graduates on the stage, so that's exciting. Oh, and of course, Evan Hill.
Evan Hill.
And
I think he's flying in from Arizona. I think he actually lives in Arizona.
Yeah, he does.
He's like, I think he was talking about moving to Arizona, and he like called people's bluffs on it. And yeah. Now he's in the situation of having to buy 66,000 Baker Mayfield jerseys.
Oh, no.
That's what living in Arizona is.
And then Will Cornell will also be a part of that. So we're excited for that one. It's coming up. We'll probably highlight it a little more next week.
It's coming up next freaking week.
But after we record a podcast again.
Wow.
All right. So a last thing on the sandwich topic.
Wow. You have more about sandwiches?
I want to give you a proposal for the bracket portion of our search for Seattle's best sandwich.
You know a thing about me and proposals. I only like indecent ones.
Oh, no. I don't know if you've noticed this. We have now gone way past the period where we could do a full 8-sandwich bracket before the live show on September 6th where the final will be held. We have 4 weeks remaining.
Okay.
We have not done Paseo and Un Bien, the showdown that we need to do. There's also some other sandwiches we might want to review if we have a chance to get to them next week.
Okay.
So my proposal is that we advance Maono all the way to the final, just as we did last year with Tacos Chukis. How does that strike you?
Oh, man. All right, fine.
Okay.
They're the clear winner of the chicken sandwich region.
Exactly. Now the challenge here is then, so that gives us a 4-sandwich bracket, a 3-week 4-sandwich bracket on the other
starting
side.
Starting next week?
Starting in 2 weeks.
Okay, I was going to say, we still need to eat more sandwiches.
We do.
We have not been to the Saigon Deli Banh Mi.
We have not.
We've not done the Un Bien
Paseo Showdown. We've not done Matt's in the Market if we want to do that.
We don't need to. Matt's in the Market is not our vibe.
We haven't done any cheese steaks. Do we want to do a cheese steak?
Didn't we do it? I mean, it wasn't a cheese steak, but the Tats is in the cheese steak family.
I suppose so. All right, so we have to pick 4.
We got to do the Colazzo's cheesesteaks though in Georgetown. Like, come on.
Yes.
It's at your house.
That is
they
by
actually
far the...
make the cheesesteaks in your basement.
What did they
it
did?
Literally is a 1-minute drive from you. And you get to see the Blue Angels along the way.
Not anymore. They're gone now.
No, they're there.
No. No, they're gone.
A fun tradition of mine driving into work on the Monday after Seafair, I just somehow end up on the like airport road that drives by the airport on the other side.
Yeah.
I don't even know how it happens, but I end up on that road every single Monday after Seafair and see the Blue Angels.
I was a little disappointed. I missed both their arrival and their departure this year because it was in LA for their departure and they flew in Sunday night when we were still driving back from the Tri-Cities.
La-dee-da. I had to be on national TV. I couldn't see the Blue Angels.
Eating tacos, 1986.
I was flying in first class back.
Don't worry about it. Okay, so we have 4 spots in the bracket then.
Oh, Lord.
So Other Coast, I think, is a must.
Okay.
Tats is obviously a must.
Yes.
Let's see. There was a third must here. And now I've forgotten. Oh, Salumi, I think, is a must.
Okay.
So that leaves one spot.
Wow.
Between Swinery Meats.
Okay.
Which I think you thought was, you expected to make the bracket. And then possibly any of the ones that we have next week.
Wow.
So how do you feel about that?
All right, sure.
All right.
Sounds good. Nobody ever remembers who wins these things after. Well, it doesn't really matter.
Sometimes the real winner doesn't win the bracket.
That is
officially.
True. You know what?
It didn't happen last year, though, and I don't think it'll happen this year.
It hasn't happened since the first year.
No. It's only one of two. It's only 50%.
We've done other brackets. It's not like Dozone all of a sudden sucks.
That's true.
We haven't revised
There's a new Dozone location.
Hello.
In downtown, apparently.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Man, the day before the Hotties played at, have I told you about this? Before they played at the Sounders game, we had an epic Dozone trip. We had just the right amount of people to like, because we sound checked at CenturyLink and the Dozone's like 3 minutes away.
Oh, thanks for the invite.
It was way before you were there.
I know.
It was like hours. You were watching some other game on TV.
I think I was watching, I forget what I was watching, but I might have driven down for that.
It was like, it was the perfect amount of people, though.
Because I've never been to a Dozone with more than 2 people in my life.
Wow. I sometimes eat like 4 people.
I guess actually that's not technically true, because that aforementioned friend who I go to lunch with one time brought his 2 children to Dozone with us.
2 children count as like one half of one adult.
Yep.
But with dumplings, I can eat like an inhuman amount of dumplings. There are some foods that I can eat such a disproportionate share of. And dumplings is one of those foods. I mean, I probably ate all told 40 dumplings, maybe even more.
Again, where was my invite?
It was great. It was a great trip.
All right, should we talk about Seattle sports? Because we have, there's a lot of sports is happening.
Maybe we
right
should
now.
Do the food at the end. Is that a crazy idea?
Yes, that's okay. A crazy idea.
All right.
We start with our NBA Seattle update, sponsored by Pagliacci, who wants to work to bring the Sonics back. Chris Daniels of King 5 reported on Tuesday that Chris Hansen's investment group has closed deals to buy two additional parcels of land in the Soto area. The group's real estate consultant, Bill Vipond, told Daniels that the group is still pro-Soto and the arena is still our primary objective. Now, they've had the request in for a street vacation necessary to construct this arena.
The term is always hilarious.
Vacation?
Just the term. When you say it like that too, the street vacation. It's like, we all want a good street vacation.
Street vacation, all I've ever wanted. Street vacation, got to get that alley away. So the problem has been the Seattle City Council. But I don't know if you're aware of this. The Seattle City Council is going to have a very different look.
Oh, really?
Come November. So four of the incumbents did not run for re-election. We've talked about that, I think, along the part of the process. Tuesday night was the primary in the city of Seattle, as well as that news. And the results, all three incumbent city council members who are running are leading their districts, but all of them are below 50% of their vote thus far.
And this is just highest percentage wins, right?
No, two highest percentages advance to the November.
Okay.
Actual, you know, this is okay. The runoff.
These are primaries. Like, I am not paying a lot of attention. I've been in Hawaii.
Do you not know how a primary works?
No, I didn't even realize this was a primary. I guess you did say primary evening results.
I did. And also, it's August. The actual election takes place in November, Fred. So, Kashama Sawant appears particularly vulnerable. As of Tuesday night, she was polling at 32.8% of the vote in her district. So the four other positions saw the incumbent decline to run for re-election. So we'll have at least four new members and possibly more than that. I think it's very likely at this point that Sawant doesn't win. Well, that'll be the race
to
watch.
It's more than likely than not that Sawant doesn't win.
I mean, if you're only at 33%, I got to assume that like that other 67%, a lot of them is, we want anyone but Sawant.
Yeah.
And they're just divided on who that person is.
Yeah, a vote for anybody else is a vote against Kashama Sawant.
Yeah, I mean, you know, possibly there are some people that she's their second choice who their first choice isn't going to make it, but I don't think that's a large percentage of the population.
Do you think it's a common thing? I mean, Seattle is the city that primaried out a mayor of all places, right? Do you think it's a common thing, or is that unique to Seattle?
I don't have a good feel for local politics in other cities, but
you know, the mayor from Portlandia.
That's true.
Do you think that Seattle is...
I think usually when that's likely to happen, the person just doesn't run for re-election.
Yeah.
As was the case with a lot of the council members this year.
Or most of the Republican Congress. Do you think that Seattle is more judgmental about local politicians than other cities? Because this to me says, I mean, you're talking about almost every city council member could turn over.
Yeah, I mean, probably not. And two of them are not. Those
they were
the citywide seats are not up this year. It's just the ones that are specific districts are up.
So there are two citywide seats and six for specific districts?
Seven for specific districts.
Oh, okay. Because you need an odd number.
You do.
Okay.
So the race to watch for NBA fans will be District 5, where Deborah Juarez was somewhat critical of the Hansen group in the discussions leading up to the Key Arena rebuild and was a strong supporter of that Key Arena rebuild happening in her district. She, as of Tuesday night, was at 42%, with Challenger and Davison Sattler at 28%. Davison Sattler worked for the Sonics before I was there.
Really?
That's what brought her to Seattle, subsequently worked as a lawyer, and has made the return of the Sonics a key issue
naturally
in her platform.
What did she do at the Sonics?
I'm not sure. I would have to ask about that.
Okay. It wasn't like her legend was known around the office?
No. Okay. But I know people who knew her when she worked for the team.
Interesting. So when you say this 42% for... Because both of those are going on to the general election, right?
Yes.
Does that mean that everybody else who is in the remaining percentages...
That one's tougher to say for me than Sawant because of the fact that, you know, Juarez is not as polarizing a candidate. I mean, I think
it does feel like with a city council position, though, like everybody's a known commodity, right? So like if you're going to vote for Juarez, you would have done it in this first round. It seems strange to me that you would be like, I'm voting for somebody else now, and then all of a sudden reverting my vote back to the incumbent.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if I were her, I would not be feeling good about my chances. Now, of course, there's still 3 months of campaigning. You know, we'll see what kind of money comes in on both sides here. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting race here, I think, that, you know, I wouldn't feel great about it. I guess,
Is it coming in, though, right? Like, right now, the name brand is the incumbent.
Obviously.
So, this is probably, in the primaries, their best chance to do well.
Yeah.
Because as time goes on, you're going to find out more and more and more about the other candidates and less about the incumbent.
Yes.
Okay. It's interesting.
Swan, by the way, did move up to 34% in Wednesday's election return. So a little bit better number for her.
By 1.2%.
She will likely be facing off against Egan Orion, who got 23% of the vote in that district, in District 3.
Interesting.
All right, let's move on to NHL Seattle, speaking of that key arena rebuild. So I tweeted about this. I don't think anyone replied to it.
Can we answer the question, though?
What question?
About the city council. Do we think that a new city council, right? If we're talking about how many new city council members?
Probably five.
Five? Which is a majority of the vote, right?
That is correct.
Do you think that there is a chance that sort of that contingent could... of the remaining council members who are likely to be reelected, are any of them pro Soto that we know of?
That are likely to be reelected?
Or the ones that either are not up for reelection or likely to be reelected?
I don't think any of them were voters in favor of the street relocation or street vacation the last time it came up.
Interesting. So, but it could be, it feels to me like within local politics, and let's just say politics in general, there's a tendency to go against what the regime before you did.
Yes.
Right. So if there are five new council members, those five council members could basically form a wall for a lot of policies.
Hypothetically, yes.
Right? That the previous regime
didn't. I don't know that ideologically those five will be aligned.
Sure.
Because some are going into the left and some are going into the right of the current council. There's not like a consistent mandate from Seattle.
This issue is not a left or right issue necessarily.
It is not, no.
I think
a lot of the opposition that built up was based on the extremely ignorant and misogynistic response from Sonics fans after the street vacation was denied by a vote that went along gender lines. So I think people that don't come in with that baggage of having been denigrated by fans who wanted the NBA back is very helpful.
It's like Sonics hooligans.
Yeah. No, it completely is.
I'm skeptical about how many of them are actually living in these districts anyway. It's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, I mean, it's why the Soto group is continuing to pursue the arena. I mean, that's not the only reason, but, you know, it's part of the reason that for optimism is the fact that the council could look dramatically different in 3 months.
Okay, let's say that you're the other group. You're the key arena group. Are you waving a mission accomplished banner, right? Because they've got the hockey team. They've got the arena.
No, because you still don't want a competing arena in the city.
Because of concerts.
Yes.
So really, that's what we're getting down to. Because for them...
It's all about concerts. It's always been all about concerts.
It's... Okay. It feels like that's such an absurd thing to define the... I mean, obviously, concerts happen throughout the year or whatever. It's like it changes and transforms throughout time. But we're talking about like... sports teams are like a living, breathing part of a community in a way that Lil Nas X playing is not. Oh. Not that we don't want to see Lil Nas X playing.
I'm sorry,
right?
What did you say about that Kanye concert earlier?
But I also saw Kanye at the Tacoma Dome and it was great there too.
Was it?
Yeah, that was incredible. We went into that night not really expecting that much and it was freaking incredible. I could have seen Kanye at any single place in Seattle. It would have been amazing, even Showbox Soto. The WAMU Theater, like, it doesn't matter. Kanye West can perform at any venue, and it would be excellent.
Kanye in my basement.
Kanye in your basement would be the best show that I'd ever been to in my entire life. Are you kidding me? So, I'm saying that I think most people...
Wait, watch out for the litter box.
Most people, to steal a term from you, are just a neutral. They don't really care. I think people care about Tacoma versus Seattle, but they don't really care about Soto versus Queen Anne.
No, probably not.
So it's going to just be an arena. Anyway, it's an interesting thought.
Yeah. All right. So the reason that no one replied to this tweet is because I forgot to make it. So I was driving by. I was driving by Key, where it was Key Arena, the other day. So I haven't been over in that area because the only reason I ever went to Seattle Center, other than I guess Bumbershoot in a month here, was to go to Storm Games. So now that they're not playing there because they're rebuilding the arena, I never go down there.
Watch Wolf Parade.
I was excited about Wolf Parade, but
It's over.
I was babysitting your 10 to 15 children.
Oh, sorry.
So that's why I couldn't make it.
Sorry about that. You're gonna have to see Cherry Glazer instead.
So. Now you drive by Key Arena, what was Key Arena, and obviously the roof is all that's still standing, but you can like literally look from one side of the arena to the other. It's bizarre.
Many of us are already aware of this information.
Well, some people might not be.
Okay.
Not all of us work in the Belltown area.
I work in the Queen Anne area. I don't know why I specifically claim Queen Anne, but don't claim Belltown.
You're on the other side of what is that, Broad? I don't know what the street is that Denny turns off to. You're in Belltown though.
Okay, where we parked as kids going to Sonics games, is that Belltown or is that Queen Anne?
Belltown, because you're on the other side of that street. That's the divide.
It's bullshit.
All right, speaking
of Queen Anne,
of the NHL team that is going to play in the rebuilt arena there, the new arena at Seattle Center. Lots of talk about the analytics department for the NHL Seattle team over the past week. Our friend and third Pelton brother, Ben Baldwin, wrote about the state of NHL analytics and NHL Seattle hiring specialist Alexander Mandrycki is their first hockey operations employee for the Athletic Seattle. And then earlier this week, the Seattle Times had a story indicating that NHL Seattle is nowhere near done with its analytics department. At the introductory press conference to introduce him, the new GM, Ron Francis, talked about working with Mandrycki is, quote, we build that department out. And the Times piece speculated that Francis could bring Carolina Hurricanes VP of Hockey Management Strategy, Eric Tulski, whom he hired when he was the GM of the Hurricanes, over to Seattle as part of the organization. Another possibility, Tampa Bay Lightning Director of Hockey Analytics, Eric Peterson, who joined the Lightning while NHL Seattle CEO Todd Leiwicki was the CEO in Tampa Bay.
Those would be huge hires.
I mean,
Eric Peterson of all people.
Look, we don't know the names because I'm not, that's not my side of things. I would know it on the NBA side. I think a couple of things are interesting. Number one, on the state of NHL analytics, I was talking to some people, some of my NBA peers who have contacts on the NHL side because of the fact that they work in cities with NHL teams about this during the summer league. And one of the things that came up is even though the former Minnesota Wild GM, where Mandrycki came from, let her go and then also let go of their other analysts that they had hired from the same website, it's Hockey War on Ice or something. I can't remember exactly what the name of the website is. But they still like felt obligated to give lip service, even though he clearly didn't care about analytics. And that's part of why he got fired last week. He still felt obligated to give lip service to the idea of hiring another person because now the NHL has gotten to that point where like you have to at least claim that you're paying attention to it. So I thought that was interesting.
Okay, so I'm going to give you three leagues.
Okay.
Rank them for me. You know what the leagues are. MLB, NHL, NBA.
I still think NHL is third, but they have closed the gap substantially really? With the NBA.
You think they're behind the NBA?
I do. Okay. I mean, this just started... Like, nobody, like, this
NCAA
discussion.
NCAA football.
Eric Tulski, who I mentioned, was the first full-time analytics employee for the Carolina Hurricanes, and that happened in 2014, I want to say.
Okay, and pretty much every NBA team employs some sort of analytics.
Yeah, by that point, you certainly had. So they started later, but they're catching up, and rapidly so. Right, did you have something else?
No.
Okay.
About hockey analytics.
I mean, I've got
an essay over here.
I thought you had another question. So my other thing is like clearly the NHL Seattle group is doing more than just paying lip service to this. It's like a priority for them. And that's cool to see for a Seattle sports organization.
I mean, they kind of have to. As a new organization.
But you don't have to.
As a new organization in Seattle, like this has to be the mindset. if they were to come in and be like, we're going to be old school, grind it out, brawling hockey or whatever. I assume these are hockey words. Enforcers.
I believe there was also a story in the Seattle
Mighty
Times.
Ducks, things of the like.
I believe there was also a story in the Seattle Times about how there's no more fighting in hockey. And that's the new norm.
I think it would be a very weird mentality to come into the league with.
Yes, but we've seen it before.
In this place, in this time, I think it would be a weird mentality to come to the league with.
Yeah, imagine if you had an NFL team that didn't pay any attention to it in Seattle.
The NFL is such a completely different league.
I know, and the success of the team is very different. All right, let's talk about the Sounders, who suffered a 3-2 loss last Sunday at home versus Sporting Kansas City, a match that I did not watch as I was on the plane.
I watched the entire match.
Yeah, tell me. It's
probably the first Sounders match that I've watched end-to-end for a long time.
What went wrong? I noticed you were blaming... Who were
Nuhu.
You?
Nuhu. I mean, everything went wrong with Nuhu early on. He gave up a penalty.
Well, that'll do it.
It was a rough match. I mean, didn't really maintain too much possession. There was a lot of... The thing that Nuhu provides is sort of energy and aggressiveness. And there is sometimes it'll lead to plays, but... A lot of times it just leads to penalties. There was a moment where early on I was like, wow, they needed the spark plug. I'm so excited to see him in the lineup. And things slowly, like one by one by one, I was just like, he can't be out there, right? Like, he cannot be on this pitch right now. And then eventually ended up giving up that penalty kick. You know, just the possession is really brutal, sort of like his dribbling ability. It's rough. It's interesting because you can see if he can hone things in, how good of a player he could be. And I think that's why there's been interest internationally for him. But right now, it's just not there. And maybe the Sounders aren't the right place for him to develop those skills either.
Well, there's some good news in that case.
Oh, is there news?
Yeah, which is that Brad Smith loan has been extended.
Yes, yeah, that news. I thought you were saying he was transferred.
No, he was not transferred. Through the end of 2019, we talked about this last week, that there was a kind of an open question about whether he would head back to Bournemouth. Despite that, the Sounders still were, as of Wednesday, reported to be on track to finalize a loan for Argentine midfielder Emmanuel Cecchini from Malaga, despite not having an open international roster spot. The deal was reportedly awaiting the signature of Malaga's owner per Malaga Oy and would last through the 2020 MLS season. Now, Wednesday was the last day of the transfer window, but that just means the paperwork has to be in. It doesn't necessarily mean that the move will be announced. It could still be announced Thursday or at some point in the not-so-distant future. The other big Sounders news of the past week, also involving the back line, Roman Torres, central defender, was suspended 10 matches by MLS for violating the MLS substance abuse and behavioral health policy by testing positive for a performance-enhancing substance. He would be able to return for the Sounders' final two matches of the regular season. Javier Arriaga replaced him as the starting center back on Sunday, but the suspension will really test the Sounders' depth at the position, where Jonathan Campbell is left as the only backup who's a natural central defender.
I didn't really notice Arriaga during the match in probably a good way.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was the long-term starter at that position. Torres is not the long-term solution. This just maybe accelerates that process a bit.
And offensively, they were playing without Rui Diaz. The attack wasn't there in the same sort of way. Jordan Morris just isn't the same kind of player that...
Yeah, he only scored two goals.
Scored two goals in this match, but I'm saying...
I don't think the problem here was the offense. They gave up three goals.
Yes, they gave up three goals. But just game flow-wise, the problem was still a little bit the offense.
Intriguingly.
If that makes sense. There was a ball that I think went off the crossbar that could have tied the match.
Yeah, I mean...
And the player who really stood out after watching it was Hanwal Buana. He was excellent in this match.
Was he off the bench?
Yeah. He came in late as a sub and assisted the second Jordan Morris goal on a perfect pass and had that ball that went off the crossbar on a very good shot and a ball that caromed back to Jordan Morris that he could have scored on.
So it seems to often be the case the score line of this match did not match the expected goals model from 538 Soccer Power Index, where the Sounders were slight leaders in the shot-based model and huge leaders in the non-shot expected goals model.
I guess I'm not shocked by that.
And both sides just scored way more than expected. It should not have been a 3-2 match based on the actual performance on the field. So the Sounders, who have now lost two in a row at home and are in a three-way tie for second in the West, although they're favored to win it by SPI, this weekend will host New England on Saturday.
I guess the last thought that I have about the team in general was they scored the second goal with Morris down 3-2 with in the 84th minute or something like that, and really struggled from that point forward to even get possession back. There were a couple of chances in there, but and I don't know whether this is a midfield issue or a defensive back issue, but it felt like typically when watching a match, the team that's behind and is probably the better team almost always dominates possession after right. that. And I was kind of shocked that they weren't able to dominate possession from there on.
Yeah, the game is usually played in their attacking third. So the Revolution come in tied for sixth in the East, but with a -7 goal differential that is worse than all but two teams in the Western Conference. So this should be a situation where the Sounders get a full 3 points. If not, reason for concern. Speaking of getting a full 3 points, Reign FC with a really strong week here won 1-0 at Houston last Friday, and then again at home 1-0 on Wednesday against the rival Portland Thorns go. In a derby match. We'll toast to that. The lone goal in both matches from newcomer Rosie White, who signed with the Reign after playing for New Zealand in the World Cup and has been playing in midfield. She had previously played for the Boston Breakers in 2017 and the Chicago Red Stars last season when she had just one goal in 12 matches, now 2-3 for the Reign. Both clean sheets for the Reign kept by Casey Murphy, who was signed in May and should theoretically be the third keeper for them if Michelle Bedos, who suffered a torn ACL, and Lydia Williams, who underwent ankle surgery after playing for Australia in the World Cup, were healthy. So she's been outstanding. Her 5 clean sheets in 10 matches are now up to 3rd in the NWSL. The Reign will stay at home to host the Utah Royals on Sunday. Still unclear when Megan Rapinoe will return from her Achilles injury. She did not suit up on Wednesday. The Reign still 4th in the NWSL, but just 2 points out of first place in a congested table.
Let's go ahead and get a 3rd victory.
Yeah, I mean, keep it going. All right, Dale. Now, this success could be kind of a bad thing in the long run.
Oh, no.
Because the rumor is that Reign FC manager Vlatko Andonovski is a contender to replace Jill Ellis as manager of the U.S. Women's National Team. Ellis stepped down after her second World Cup win, effective at the conclusion of the victory tour for the USWNT that began last Saturday and will resume later this summer.
Are they playing in Seattle on this victory tour?
I don't think so.
Wow. Chuck Klosterman's playing in Seattle.
They didn't have that good attendance the last time. They played in the victory tour here in 2015. I went to that match, and it wasn't that great attendance.
You don't think it would be this time?
Probably. I mean, the chance to see Rapinoe in the city of Seattle would be pretty big. Former Reign FC manager Jill Harvey is also a contender for that role, according to former USWNT defender and current ESPN analyst Kate Markgraf, who herself has been tabbed as the frontrunner for the USWNT's general manager role.
Wow.
Per Washington Post.
Okay.
Which means that she would be hiring
she knows.
Head coach. So that was kind of interesting. The Seattle Storm. Sliding. A 99-79 loss on Friday versus Washington in their first game back from the WNBA All-Star break. And then on Sunday, an 83-75 loss at Los Angeles. It's now a 3-game losing streak dating back to before the All-Star break. And they storm down to 7th in both the WNBA standings and the league in terms of point differential. What's gone wrong during the losing streak? Their defensive rating has been the worst in the WNBA in that span after previously ranking 2nd. And part of it is, and get ready to check out this bingo square for the first time in a while, the randomness of opponent three-point shooting.
There we go.
Opponents are making 45% of their threes over the last 3 games. The Storm also forcing fewer turnovers during that span. They've really been relying on those steals defensively and to as well as to generate offense.
What about three-point attempts, though?
I don't think it's been a dramatic change. I mean, you know,
you don't think defense is a factor here?
It's just defense luckiness. Is a factor, but it's also a small sample size, and they've just played really good teams in this span. They played Las Vegas, who, albeit without Asia Wilson, before the break. The Mystics are far and away the best team in the league, but nobody notices because Elena Deladon has been injured too much for them to have the best record.
Okay.
But they're like the obvious favorites to win that championship as long as she stays healthy. And then the Sparks are just starting to get healthy. This was Candace Parker's probably best game of the season. And Maria Vedeva, who was gone playing in the European Championships and then injured, had a big game off the bench for them. So, you know, not really. None of these are surprising results. It's just kind of the string of them. So, but it does leave the Storm needing to come up with a win on Thursday against Dallas, the final game they'll play in Everett during the regular season. before heading out on the road to begin a 3-game road trip.
That's one place I won't go see a concert.
Yeah. On Sunday at New York Liberty.
You don't think this is Seattle Mariners hot start coming back to earth?
I mean, I don't think they're going to get no hit twice in like 3 weeks, if that's what you're asking.
I almost
and then like have someone take it.
Worked up at Mariners Hot Takes because of that.
Oh, I almost did too.
The second no hitter, just like, oh, thank the Lord.
I mean, especially the third game at San Diego on Tuesday night, where there was a no hitter. Yeah,
I got the like no hit alert on my phone, and it was the Mariners, and I was like,
I mean, okay, well, a condensed version of my hot takes because we didn't have time for more.
Don't burn yourself.
Number one, if you're going to be bad, be historically bad.
Yeah.
My theory.
Is that what they're... Are they nearing historically bad?
I mean, not in terms of overall. They're not the Orioles, but in terms of getting no hit. Yes, no team has ever been three times in a season, I believe. Number two, I think they should start marketing this. Like, come to the ballpark. You could see history.
Oh, yeah. The opponents or the Mariners should start marketing this?
Yes.
There we go. The Mariners marketing it is... Remember Edgar?
All right, UW men's basketball. Jalen Noel signed a 4-year contract with the Timberwolves, who drafted him in the second round in June. Only the first year
The Mariners are not even in place for that good of a draft pick right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of tanking in baseball.
They're 15 games up on the Tigers, right? They do it just straight through the worst teams.
Yeah, there's no like lottery or anything.
Right, 2, 4, 6, 7. Like, they'll probably finish with the 5th pick or something.
Yeah.
God, this team, they can't even tank, right? Oh, my God. So good.
All right, so only the first year that contract is guaranteed. The deal sounds similar to the one given to by Minnesota to undrafted rookie Naz Reid, who excelled for the Timberwolves in summer league, where Noel did not play due to injury.
Where's Naz Reid from?
OSU.
All right.
The other note here, UW 2021 or 2020 recruiting class target Marjon Beauchamp, who played his junior year at Garfield before transferring to Dream City Christian in Arizona for his senior year, announced that he will forego college. He announced this a year ahead of time to train privately for the NBA draft in 2020-21. He's rated a 4-star recruit by ESPN.
So he's going into his senior year of high school?
Yes.
And already announced this?
Yes.
That is bold.
It's an unusual strategy, but kind of an extension.
Accepted payment from an agent?
No, because then you still wouldn't be eligible to play high school ball.
Oh, because he's playing high school next year?
Yes.
That is very strange.
I mean, I think it's kind of an extension of what we've seen a number of players now foregoing, bypassing the college route in favor of other things. Darius Bazley, who was drafted in the first round by the Oklahoma City Thunder, worked as an intern for New Balance this past year. Jalen LeCue, who went undrafted but signed a 2-way contract with Phoenix, was someone else who did a similar thing in terms of not playing college basketball. And it just with the number of players going over to, not a 2-way contract. He's got a full guaranteed contract for this year. The number of players who are going overseas to play in Australia as part of their Next Stars program, this is something we're going to see more and more. And I think it's probably a particularly good idea if you're very athletic, but not actually that good at basketball. I
mean, they're definitely the second tier.
And I think that, right. That describes...
You go be the intern of the Hezzy Jimbo at New Balance.
That describes Marjon Beauchamp, who I've not been particularly taken with when I've seen him at the crossover.
You're saying
or
that
the Nike Hoop Summit select practice.
You're not really interested in doing 3-4 years of college. But you don't want NBA teams to see you too much.
No, you definitely don't want that.
Because if you did go to college for the first year, you're not going to the NBA after that.
I mean, you can go into the draft, but maybe you're going to go undrafted.
Yeah.
You know, football fall camp is underway. The QB battle continuing.
There's no QB battle. We know who the quarterback is.
There might be a little bit of
it's Jake.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Great point.
No, we know who the quarterback is.
Jacob Eason, I've noticed a lot of tweets from fall camp about him hitting the deep ball.
Yeah.
Haven't noticed anything about his consecutive completion streaks.
Oh, come on.
That's what I'm concerned about. We know he's got a strong arm. That's not been in question.
But what are the tweets about the consecutive completion streaks?
I'm just saying.
He's going against the UW defense.
That's fair. I've been excited to see Chico McClatcher's name popping up repeatedly in practice reports.
It's been a while since we've heard about Chico.
Yeah, I mean... You know, he was barely involved last year at the injury that he suffered at Colorado 2 years ago. So I'm just excited for him to be in the mix again, especially with, you know, a wide receiver core that I think more is expected of this year.
Jacob Eason's the quarterback. So how many days are there until the first Husky game?
How many days are there until the first Husky game? There are 23 days. Now that we've crossed over midnight on this interminable podcast.
23 days?
Yep.
Wow! I hope you've got your pumpkins ready because fall is here.
Oh.
Hard Knocks is on. You're not getting a little bit excited about the fall.
Let me have my last bit of summer. No.
God, you're always like this. Everybody else is getting hyped on football, ready for it to be a little bit cooler, ready to start eating some pumpkin spice oatmeal. Everybody's excited about it. We want to go to Trader Joe's and buy pumpkin everything.
Does this mean we're getting a Trader Bros?
We might.
Live Trader Bros?
Maybe. And it's not late enough. Everybody's excited about going and getting in the mix for the fall. The fall is the best. I'm telling you, fall is number one season.
I'm sorry. Do you like it being darker earlier? Do you like it being colder?
A little bit.
Do you like it starting to rain again?
A little bit. You're wrong. Okay. Summer is a great season. And when summer isn't happening, summer is my number one season. But when summer is happening, fall is the number one season. I'm telling you, summer's like I come home and I'm like, what am I doing? Am I grilling?
Yeah, that's a great option to have. I grilled at your house once I finally figured out how to light the barbecue.
How many days did it take you to figure out how to light the barbecue? It'll work. I'll show you how to use it. I'm just saying, in the fall, we're talking Thursday's football. Friday, we got some action. Saturday, we've got full days of college football.
Friday, you've often
Sunday,
got
Pac-12. NFL Red Zone. Ever heard of it? And then Monday, football. There's only two bad days in the fall. And then the NBA starts also, or which you might not be happy about.
The offseason's great.
God, I'm so ready for the fall. It's too damn hot.
It's not even that hot. It was only hot one day.
But we're sweating like we're the Rock in Fast Five right now. It is too damn hot.
I'm not sweating that badly.
I just watched Fast Five.
The Huskies are the highest ranked Pac-12 team in the coaches poll at number 12 overall. Oregon, one spot behind them at number 13. Utah, number 15. WSU, number 21. Stanford, number 23. That's right. Four of the six teams in the Pac-12 North are ranked.
It's a wide open Pac-12 North this year.
It sure is.
Honestly, if you were to ask me who the favorite would be, Oregon feels like the comfortable favorite, the safe favorite, if you will. I mean,
Stanford. I don't know who hosts Stanford, Oregon, but Stanford hosts UW, and really often
UW hosts Oregon.
Yes,
but still, I think returning the senior quarterback is the most important thing here.
Fair point.
I think Wazoo is the one team who, if we look at the end of the season, are most likely to not be in the top 25.
I was kind of surprised by that. I mean, people were putting a lot of faith in presumably Gage Guprud.
It was faith in them being able to develop quarterbacks.
Stanford is also hosting Oregon. I think Stanford should be the favorite here. I mean, that to me is a bigger factor than who you have on the roster. Is you playing at home or not?
I don't know if you're factoring in Stanford sucks. Stanford's going to blow some Thursday night game. Just wait till they see San Diego State.
Oh, yeah.
I know it doesn't count toward the Pac-12, but just like, come on.
I'm pretty sure they beat San Diego State last year when I was in Palo Alto.
Did they?
I think so. Jet Toner's family was pretty excited when they came over to
the
hotel
yards
across the street.
Jet Toner's family was happy.
Yeah.
Any of these teams could win the Pac-12.
Yes.
Wazoo is the one that, if I had a bet, I would put probably relatively even money between UW, Oregon, and Stanford.
Yes. So speaking of fall coming, there is a Seahawks game
tomorrow. We are going to see Geno Smith in action.
19 hours of Izwar speaking. There will be Seahawks football as they host the Denver Broncos in their preseason opener on Thursday night.
I have four words for you. Paxton Lynch revenge game.
Oh, that's a good set of words. Yeah, I'm into that. So Russell Wilson will not play in this game. Geno Smith set to start at quarterback before undergoing a procedure that Pete Carroll would not divulge ahead of this game, presumably not wanting the Broncos to be able to target him. Was noted by reporters at practice that he had tape on his knee. Sounds like, in addition to Russell Wilson, many other starters will not play either in this game. This is part of a trend towards NFL teams playing their starters less and less in the interminable, way too long preseason.
I'll tell you, the NFL does a lot of things wrong. Playing the starters less in the preseason is one of the things they do right.
Well, having four preseason games may be one of the things they do wrong, although it will give a lot of opportunity for position battles, including at quarterback with Geno Smith and Paxton Lynch, but a number of other players unable to play due to injury. Tight end and Dixon underwent knee surgery on Wednesday and is out 4 to 5 weeks, so, you know, going to be a matter of whether he can get back for the start of the regular season.
But
rookie defensive
end, you know who that opens up room for.
Well, he also is not playing on Thursday, the thrill. Rookie defensive end LJ Collier suffered an unusual sprain of the top of his foot. No timeline yet for his return. Some speculation he could be back in time for week one, which would be good news for the Seahawks' flagging pass rush and depth at defensive end.
I'll tell you, the LJ Collier pick, it's funny because you wouldn't call it a bust before anybody's ever played a game. Just not feeling great about it.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, the Seahawks have had a lot of injuries to their top draft picks recently in the preseason.
Just the chances of him having a replacement level NFL season feel very low. Do you agree with this assessment?
No, I think given his skill set, he's more likely to be replacement level or better, just not have the top end ability.
Well, I guess that's my concern. Is
especially
like,
given his age.
If he doesn't play well now, if he misses all, he's missing his rookie training camp. He's missing potentially, he's missing all preseason games. He's missing potentially NFL games that actually matter. Well, they don't matter. Nothing matters, right? None of this shit matters, except for the sandwiches.
We're getting nihilist at this part of the podcast?
Well, I'm just saying I don't want to say that it matters because an NFL game doesn't matter. But
have you read the book Sapiens?
Have you read the new Chuck Klosterman book? Are you getting it tomorrow?
I usually don't like to get the hardcover, so I may get an older book in paperback if I can do that.
Interesting.
Because you can never find your copy of Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs, can you?
I'm Killing Yourself to Live. I think you have my copy of Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs.
I don't.
So you're going to buy that?
I might buy that. Or Fargo Rock City, which I have not read since that was the first Chuck Klosterman book I ever read.
You have that in hardcover, don't you?
No.
You think that's in my house somewhere?
Could be. I can't rule it out.
Do you want me to go look for it?
I suppose so. Not, like not during the podcast.
12:16 a.m.
Let's finish the pod first.
Just don't take a picture with him.
Okay.
It kind of sucks that it's opposite the Seahawks preseason, right?
And the Storm is playing Thursday night, too. I had a lot going on Thursday night. But
yeah, tell Chuck we're pretty annoyed with him with the scheduling. But ask if he wants to come on the podcast.
Of course.
We're talking taco time.
Chuck Klosterman, come on the pod. Oh, that broke you.
Come on the pod. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is LJ Collier.
It's a bust.
Come on the boat.
Oh, no. All right. So also missing...
He needs to be good right now. He needs to be fine right now. LJ Collier needs to be better than most rookies in his rookie year because of his age.
Also missing the preseason opener due to injury, running backs Travis Homer, CJ Procise, and possibly JD McKissick.
CJ Procise is missing again?
Oh, no, we're not doing this. We're not doing it. The thrill is back practicing after his patellar tendon injury, but not quite ready to go for this game. And possibly also tight end Jacob Hollister, who has appeared to impress in training camp with plenty of opportunities. Linebacker Bobby Wagner, who underwent what was presumably PRP last week, but was not made specifically clear. And then safety Leno Hill, who cleared the PUP list earlier this week, but is, again, not quite back. And then the last bit of Seahawks news, linebacker Michael Kendricks sent his...
I'm like, who the hell is Leno Hill? It'll take a while.
Yeah. His sentencing on insider trading charges is scheduled for September 25th per TMZ Sports. Was previously delayed twice earlier this year. That would fall between week 3 and week 4 of the Seahawks schedule. So we will see what kind of sentence Kendricks gets.
So instead of me asking you who we're going to watch in this preseason game, what we're going to watch for, I'm going to ask you, what will be the headlines on Friday from this preseason game?
You know, I wish I had a better sense for whether Denver's playing their starters and it's going to be like a slog for the Seahawks against them in that early period. You know, maybe a big play by DK Metcalf, I think it has a decent chance of being the headline. I mean, everybody's very excited to see him in action for the first time.
Rookie Barton excels in Seahawks debut.
I can see that. I don't know if that's going to be the headline.
That's it. That's all we've got.
A linebacker?
After this game.
Oh, it's that, that dire.
No. I'm trying to think of the DK Metcalf one. Those are the two. We're literally the only player. There'll be somebody else who we're not thinking about, but the two that we're going to be paying the most attention to in this game will be Cody Barton and DK Metcalf.
DK Country Metcalf shines in CenturyLink debut. I mean, that's too long of a headline, but
yeah, that's the worst headline I've ever heard.
Do you want to work the Donkey Kong in there somehow?
It's like Leslie Knope headlines. DK Country. You think that's his nickname now?
Well, no, the CenturyLink is DK's country.
Okay. CenturyLink becomes DK's country. DK's conquest. Super Bowl at CenturyLink again.
Anything else to discuss on this preseason?
Is this preseason game, not the whole preseason. There's nothing else that we're paying attention to.
There's some other stuff we're paying attention to. I mean, the quarterback battle between Smith and Lynch will be interesting.
Wow. I do not care. If you could fast forward our lives to whatever, September 6th, Pelton Cast Live at Peloton Yacht Club, and you were like, wow, Geno Smith really claimed that backup quarterback spot. Or if you were like, wow, Paxton Lynch, just so solid during the preseason, really took hold of that backup quarterback job. I'd say great or great.
I want to see a lot of the rookie wide receivers. Jazz Ferguson apparently had some good moments in the scrimmage they had last week at Bothell's Popkini.
Smooth jazz for the Seahawks in preseason opener.
See, that's longer than mine.
No, that was a perfect headline. That was the perfect headline. You're just like some reference to Donkey Kong Country. Smooth jazz, everybody knows.
Okay, I don't dispute that.
God. We're going to have to tweet what the best headline. What's the best future headline from the Seahawks? Whatever your DK's country is now, CenturyLink Field. God, freaking the smooth jazz one's going to win.
But also Ursua, John Ursua. That's his name, right?
Yeah. Nothing but sunshine for Seahawks Ursua.
Gary Jennings.
In preseason debut. Something like that.
I don't know if they have a good Gary Jennings headline.
Take me home is not what Gary Jennings says in Seahawks debut. Because he's from West Virginia. Right? Come on.
You're old.
I'm out here trying. Baby not Fantasy even Genius trying.
Is way too into the song Country Roads now.
There's no way too into the song Country Roads. So you're not even competing out here. All right, do your Seafair recap.
So it was another thrilling Seafair on the shores of Lake Washington for the fourth time in 5 years.
You should tweet the headlines, though, and have people vote on the best one.
Get me? I mean, maybe people can submit their own headlines.
No, we have to do a poll.
The
pull
champion
do a poll.
Was decided by penalty, including three times in that span, also 2015 and 2017, where the determination of who won the race was not made until after the awards ceremony.
So good.
It's so bad. J. Michael Kelly and Graham Trucking, the winner this time for the second consecutive week, winning via a penalty on Jimmy Shane and the Miss Home Street. The same outcome is in 2015, a very similar race. So what happened is...
go into this.
So as we talked about last week, the race happens before the race. As someone pointed out on Twitter, I should find who that is.
And Hydroplane Twitter?
Oh, that might have been in an email too.
That might have been you saying it to yourself.
No. Someone sent this to us. It was via the Peltoncast email, now that I think about it, rather than via Twitter. So
it was you imagining your conversation with Chip Hanna.
It was Chris, the listener, Chris Wheeler. Races that are over before they start has to be some sort of math axiom about taking the limit of the Russell Wilson separation is in the preparation, saying to infinity. You can literally end the race before it starts through preparation.
Clearly
not. Cannot separate through Clearly preparation. Not. Any better than that. Anyway, Rush should sponsor a Hydra, which is a great conclusion.
What do we think? What would it take to have a Peltoncast Hydra?
It's too much money. We're not going to be able to do it.
God.
It's just, It's a lot of money. Polyachihedra, can we make that happen?
We just have to get all of our partners together and just throw a Pelton cast on there.
Yeah, on the back. Yeah. Okay. So one of the rules about this pre-race period where you're fighting for lanes is that you can't go less than 80 miles an hour for more than five seconds.
Okay, that's in any time.
So you get...
When does that time period start, though?
As soon as the five-minute gun sounds when you can go out on the course.
Okay.
So you get one warning. The second time you do that, it's a one-minute penalty. And what part of what happened here is with about 2 minutes before the start, the home street, unclear why, maybe got washed down by the rooster tail of another boat. The spray basically goes into your engine and you lose power. Lost power on the backstretch, went completely dead. And it appears they maybe got the warning at that point, which seems kind of ridiculous to me. But anyways...
Because they weren't trying to go under 80 miles per hour.
But we didn't think that they were penalized. We were told that the Graham Trucking with J. Michael Kelly was penalized. So as we're watching the race, we're thinking the home street is home free and that Graham Trucking, which was running second on the water, was in fact fighting to lap another boat to finish fifth instead of sixth. And then like 45 minutes after the race... They come back and tell everyone, oh, hey, once we reviewed the video, it turned out that the Graham Trucking didn't get penalized. The home street actually got penalized. Like, you know, you walk away from the shore thinking one boat wins. And then I didn't find out until I was stuck on the South Park Bridge, I think was when I looked at my Twitter again and saw, oh, yeah, it turns out an entirely different boat actually
again,
won the
who
race.
Who is this person from Hydroplane Twitter?
It was Chris, the listener, Chris Wheeler. Oh, who
he tweeted
this
it again?
No, who tweeted this information? That was Nathan Joyce of the Seattle Times. Okay. He's done yeoman's work covering the hydros, and went along with our deja vu joke on Twitter. So appreciated that from Nathan Joyce. So again, this is the third time in 5 years this has happened, and it seems to only happen at Seafair. I don't know what I don't know why it's so bad. I don't necessarily know what they can do about this exactly, but it's basically like if you took VAR in the World Cup and how annoying it was and just made that an hour after the game ended.
Applied it retroactively.
Yeah. Like,
they're like, well, they actually scored more goals. Let me just say, you're too far gone.
Like, I can't mean unlimited hydroplane racing? Or
save you, right? But... I do have a 7-year-old child.
That's true.
Who I can save from this plight right now of unlimited hydroplane racing.
How much did he watch on Sunday?
You know, he was a lot more interested in theory than he was in practice.
That often happens with 7-year-olds.
We did watch the final race. We saw the home street get crowned champion.
Yeah.
And then we turned the TV off.
One does.
So this would be like, I just love this. It'd be like the NBA Finals. Adam Silver has given Kawhi the trophy. NBA Finals MVP. And then an hour later on the internet, everybody is like, psych, the Warriors actually won. Here you go. That's my favorite thing.
So
the
bad.
Entire broadcast has happened. ESPN is done. They've had the confetti at the game. And then an hour later, they're just like, they tweet it. They're like, oh, BT dubs, the Warriors actually won.
Wait, by the way, did you see the quote? There's nothing worse than something like that taking place, H1 Unlimited chief referee Rick Sansom said. Makes us look like idiots.
How about something like that happening 3 out of the last 5 years?
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. If it makes you look like an idiot one time, what does it make you look like when it happens every 2 years for the last 6 years?
You know what? You don't have to worry about it. It's only the last 5 years. You know what? You don't have to worry about it because this sport is rapidly dying before Luka gets of age to actually follow it.
It makes us look like an idiot. The thing is, nobody cares, right? It's not like people left and found out that the other boat won and felt like their day was ruined.
I think some people did online, like a dozen.
But it's just like, if one boat wins, who cares? If the other boat wins, who cares? The thing is, it's not an interesting product on the field. And by the field, I mean the beautiful shores of Lake Washington.
It's tough going for unlimited hydroplane racing at this point.
Because I...
But better, by the way, than the light class that they had there, the E350 class, mm-hmm. where they ended up with a two-boat final.
Oh, God, that was so brutal. Two-boat so final. Bad. But I'm just saying, like, if the race itself were interesting, that would be more important than anything else. But not only was the race itself on the TV broadcast or live not an interesting race...
Oh, but the before the race was pretty interesting.
I mean,
especially when the home street went dead, and you're like, oh, all of a sudden they're completely out of things. Like, that would have thrown everything off.
I didn't even see that on the TV broadcast.
Interesting.
I was watching the TV broadcast and did not even see it. They mentioned
perhaps I should have been on the TV broadcast then.
Wow,
because I was all over that one.
Dude, the Schicksal guy,
Pat O'Day, the Pat legendary O'Day. Pat O'Day.
Yeah, I think you might have been more aware of things than Pat O'Day.
I mean, I'm a little younger than Pat O'Day. Just a little bit. Pat O'Day is a legend.
Then the legendary Pat O'Day on the beautiful shores of Lake Washington. But the reality is nobody cares who wins. Nobody even really cares about the race. What people care about is going out in the sunshine on a beautiful Sunday in August in Seattle. There was no smoke in the air. It was sunny all day. It was the perfect temperature. You were on the water. It was
cooler.
Excellent experience. People were getting wasted on the log boom. Everybody was having a good time. And that matters a lot more than the hydroplane racing.
That is
and
true.
That's what you can't take away.
Yeah. I mean, and one thing that people, like, I think get wrong about Seafair is I think they tend to think that it's a bunch of old white guys. Mm-hmm. Like, the people who actually care about the hydroplane races? Yes. 100%.
Confirmed.
But it's the most diverse event that I go to all year.
They talked about bringing some youth into the organization, and they contacted you.
No, they did. No, what that they did?
They're unaware of you because they don't have the internet.
It's really like a melting pot of the city of Seattle out at Seafair. It's awesome. That's one of my favorite things about it.
And I have to. Wow, I'm getting a little bit too real here, for being honest.
I mean, what is an hour 40 into the pod, but to get too
that
real?
That takes place on the south side of Seattle, right?
It is, yes.
It is representative of the south side of Seattle and the people who would go to an event like this. It's representative of young people, right?
But it's also like, it's like, I don't know if it's specifically, but it's like people who would work at Amazon come to it.
Do they?
I don't know that probably they don't, but...
You actually just lost me there.
Like their families. Wait, like it's like
let's,
a
let's
weird...
walk that back.
It's a weird cross-section of Seattle.
Yeah, those people are not from Seattle. I'm saying that there are young people from Seattle who go to party at Seafair because it's a day on the water.
Those people are on the log boom, so I don't necessarily see them.
But you can walk down the shores of Genesee Park and see these huge parties where you're like, wow, look at all these kids here having a good time.
I mean, it's just a shocking number of families. Like, it's just a thing to do for them on the weekend.
We're like a freaking Seafair ad. They should sponsor us instead of Pagliacci.
They should give us a hydroplane.
What we need to do first is explain to them what a podcast is.
Oh, no.
We're
going
to have to start with explaining what an iPod is and go from there.
Oh, no. So anyways, the call ruined a perfect weekend for Jimmy Shane, who topped qualifying and also won all three preliminary heats in the Miss Home Street. And they would have clinched the National High Points Championship had it not been penalized in the final. Now must wait until the final race of the H1 Unlimited season at San Diego in September to potentially clinch the championship, which they surely will.
Has Jimmy Shane ever considered just not? Like, come
not,
on.
Not what?
This is a clown show. He's an hour later. He's
What else is he going to do? Go to the like smaller boats?
Do you think he knew?
What do you mean?
On the water, did he know that he was being penalized?
No.
They just make shit up like an hour later. That's not an okay way to approach things.
It's like VAR, like I said. It's like VAR, except it
but
happens after
like
the game ends.
You know, the thing is, people have to understand the decision to act appropriately thereafter. And he didn't have that option. Because I'm not saying he would have necessarily passed the other boat, but if he knew on the water that he was going to be penalized, as you do in literally every other sport ever, you don't just an hour later be like, oh, you didn't win, this other person won. Then he can't respond to that. And if he could have, he might have been like, there might have been a fun race if you're like, wow, he has a 1 minute penalty or whatever. He has to get around this track so fast that he's like catching up with boats.
You can't catch up with.
He could have tried. You don't even think he would have tried?
You can only lap the slowest boats in that scenario.
Can I also just say the like complaining and bitching about the Blue Angels is like, dog, maybe they're not for you. Look, I don't really appreciate sort of like exertions of military power, right? This is not a thing that I'm for. I do not care about the Blue Angels. I have really never cared about the Blue Angels, unlike some people here. Who saw them maybe 4 times this weekend.
Only 3 times. It was cloudy on Friday, so I didn't bother going.
The idea of planes flying kind of close to each other and doing tricks doesn't interest me at all. But also, I can understand that things exist in this world that are not specifically for me. Attention, people of Seattle. There are things that happen in this world that are for other people that are not even for the people who live in the city of Seattle. They're for even the surrounding areas. We call it the greater Seattle area. Not every fucking thing that has to happen. Like, it'd be like complaining. Wow, I'm on a roll here. It'd be like, I knew this was going to get good at the 2-hour mark. It would be like complaining about every single flight that went by because you weren't on that flight.
First off, your youngest child thinks that you were on every single flight last week.
And that's each one was majestic.
Each one was
but
a
I'm just saying,
one.
Like, there are things that exist. Like, I can understand the argument against spending money for demonstrations of military power, obviously. But there are people who enjoy this for other reasons than that. Like, the amount of people...
Childlike wonder and glee.
This isn't fucking Top Gun where every single person is going out and signing up for the Navy. These are some cool-looking planes flying by. That's it! The amount of people who sign up for the Navy, and also, like, really, if we're talking about sort of, like, ranking things that we're most against here, the Navy's probably fairly low on that list.
This is going to get to a larger discussion that we don't need to have on this podcast.
But understand what I'm saying, that not everything that happens in the city of Seattle needs to specifically be for you, and the noise is not that great.
Well, especially as compared to living under the flight path 365 days
other
a year.
People, I know that no person in the city of Seattle has ever lived under the flight path like we have, but some people do that. Some people have their windows replaced by the airport to live under the flight path. Some people can't take phone calls. I mean, I don't live there anymore. But some people can't take phone calls outside because every 5 minutes a fucking plane flies over. That's a lot worse than the goddamn Blue Angels because it happens every single day of the year.
You know what's even worse than having your windows replaced by the port? Not having your windows replaced by the port because of the fact that they were too vintage to do so.
Grandma and Grandpa chose not to.
I know. That's very loud.
But you feel me, right?
Of course I feel
like the entitlement is insane.
What? You're saying that there are some entitled people in the city of Seattle? That's a shocking development. No. What I would point out here is that, like, every so often there's a debate in some sort of local media about should Seafair still exist? And it's like, bro, it's a free market environment. Like, yeah. If people are willing to go, it yes. will continue to exist. Your opinion about whether Seafair should exist is irrelevant.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not on the ballot. It's not going to be like that. It's either going to make sense financially
whatever
or
whatever the
it's
publication
not.
Is, nobody cares about their opinion about it.
Well, that's probably a fair assessment.
I know one that we especially do not care about their opinion about almost anything.
It's true.
And one issue in particular. Anyway, Pagliacci pizza. So good. There's one thing we can all agree on, and that's how delicious Pagliacci pizza is. Grand salami, primo, pepperoni. I mean, come on. Pagliaccio salad,
you
undefeated.
You didn't ask earlier about my content idea that I came up with.
Oh, wait. What was that?
The search for Seattle for Pagliacci's best slice.
Oh, hello. It's like a brand. If we're going to have to like list it as like a branded content.
SpawnCon.
Oh, I thought you were like SpawnCon. I thought you had written like a read for it.
No.
Oh, because I was like, wow, your reads. I was listening to you do them and I was like, these are shockingly bad if you wrote these.
Which one?
I mean, I was silently judging. It's okay.
Which one?
Just you didn't have any read. You weren't like.
Oh, the Pagliacci? No, we were freestyling then.
Yeah. Well, when you told me the SpawnCon thing, I thought you meant that you had written an ad read for Pagliacci.
Obviously not.
Clearly. Search for Seattle. Search for Pagliacci's best slice.
Yeah. I feel like that's something we could maybe do in the fall because it probably won't be as...
After every Husky game. We're still going to go there. It's just the pizza's going to be free now.
Yeah. There you go. All right. On that note, if you've actually made it through an hour and 50 minutes of this podcast, God bless
Pelton
your soul.
Pelton Cast Live, September 6th at Pelton Yacht Club. PeltonCast@gmail.com. Fantasy football.
Beast Pod Live.
Lactose beer.
Beast Pod Live, August 16th at Fuel Sports.
Folding chairs affordably delivered to Belltown Yacht Club.
Oh, jeez. This has gone way off the rails. Bye. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Thanks.